Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right, 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Man, we got to start using Apple Cash.
Okay, why?
It's so easy and convenient. Apple Cash lives in messages.
All right.
Yeah, so I can pay you in the convos we're already having, not forget a payment or have the money sitting somewhere just collecting dust.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, and then you can use that cash right away and buy stuff at like a store with Apple Pay.
I don't have to do all the bank transfer stuff?
No, it's just right there. It's easy, convenient, and secure.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
See how easy that was? Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings. We are a sibling revelry.
No, no.
Sibling revelry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling revelry.
That's good.
We were lucky enough to talk to Bert Kreischer, Cotty, and Annie. Bert is such a funny comedian. Oh my God. You got to watch his show actually on Netflix. I think it's called Cabin. It's something like that. Anyway, it's hysterical. He brings all of these comedians up to this cabin and does all this crazy shit with them. It's really funny. Obviously, Bert is commandeers. He's got a lot to say. The guy doesn't seem like he's able to keep quiet. And we soon learned maybe why, you know.
Sometimes I find comedians, when we talk to comedians and their families, that there is a lot of interesting material, which clearly is why they're comedians. It's like, you know, and in this one, there was a lot, we had a lot of talk about anxiety, which when we were done with our, you know, 2-hour sesh with them, that was the one thing we talked about. We wanted to say, like, let's bring that up in the intro, that anxiety was a huge part of this interview, big theme, and how common it is. And
I think that people are more apt to be open nowadays with some of these feelings, but I still think it's a scary thing to admit. And there are levels of anxiety, you know? I mean, there's your just day-to-day feeling anxious for something, having fear. I mean, I went through a period where it was just debilitating. It came in waves, you know, waves of insanity. And then I'd kind of get a little bit better, but I wasn't able to leave my house. I mean, I was feeling it. And everyone, all three of these siblings, they were experiencing anxiety. I mean, I think they still do. I think they try to keep it at bay.
You know, Bert would have these anxiety attacks when he was younger, but he didn't know what they were. And the parents didn't know it was anxiety at all, which probably is pretty similar to you, Oliver, at times. I bet you had a lot of anxiety that nobody really knew was anxiety, you know?
I think it's there's a theme happening in humanity. I don't know why we're all fucking so anxious, but, you know, we are.
But it was a wonderful conversation. Bert loves to talk, so he basically talked the whole time.
Yeah, but I love how open Bert is. And, you know, but the thing is, he took over in the beginning, right? And we were kind of waiting to hear from the sisters. Towards the end, though, they seemed to, you know, they were more comfortable expressing their opinions, and maybe Bert gave them a little bit of space to say what they needed to say. But, you know, what a great family. Just a cool group.
But we had a great talk about teenagers and this crazy world we're living in right now.
Yeah, obviously, they love each other like crazy. You can just tell. And they're great supports for each other. And it's fun, man. It's nice to see it. It's nice to see.
Yeah. So here is Bert, Annie, and Cotty Kreischer.
My name's Bert Kreischer. I'm a stand-up comedian. This is my sister, Annie Kreischer. She's 2 years younger than me. This is my sister, Cotty Kreischer. She's an accident. My parents had sex after mowing the lawn one day. She walked in on them, and then we got this. But it's a really, you know, it's a really fantastic dynamic because, and by the way, I will overshare. You'll watch my sister's cringe.
During a period of time,
our parents split up, and it kind of really brought the three of us really close together. At the time, I was in Tallahassee at Florida State. Annie was at TCU.
I was at Georgia Southern.
And then we all ended up in Tallahassee. And then Cotty was in like 10 years old at the time. And she just drove up to school with me and lived with me for a month while my parents were going through that. And so at one point we were all in Tallahassee together and she should have been in grade school.
That's crazy.
Your parents divorced and then they got back together?
They split up, took some time apart, and then got back together for better or for worse.
Are they still together now?
Oh yeah, they're still together.
Oh man. We gotta work ourselves to this. So you're born in Florida.
Yeah, St. Petersburg, yeah.
And your sister comes along. Did you have the Oliver moment of like, what the fuck just happened? I should be the only person in this house.
No, although that is my personality. That is definitely my personality. I think, I think that people knew so little about raising weird kids back then that... that they just kind of, I think we were really close too.
Yeah, we were close.
And so I was just some weird kid who called himself Wild Boy and lived in a Speedo and I just only wore Speedos. And
was this like as a toddler?
Yeah. Oh, up until like I was 10 years
Three
old.
3 years ago. Bert seems to be the guy that I wish I was, you know what I mean? It's my inner self there. I love the Speedo sort of wild. What were you called again? Wild Boy.
There was a very popular show on television around the Sid and Marty Krofft genre called Wild Boy and Bigfoot. And if you ever run into someone that remembers that show, all of a sudden you bond with that man immediately. And you're like, hold on, you remember Bigfoot and Wild Boy? And they're like, are you fucking kidding me? I was Wild Boy. And then you're like, I was Wild Boy too. So I was definitely Wild Boy.
So the age difference between you guys is 10 years then. So the youngest to the oldest is 10 years.
Yeah. I was 10 when she was born. She was 8. Their relationship is insanely close. Like, they're sisters, but they're really, I mean, they lived together when they first moved to LA, and now they live on condos above each other and below each other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's not weird to us. Like, the way we are, like, when my wife had to enter the family, we have a nickname for each other. We call each other Big Team. It's our uncle gave it to us, and we thought it was so ridiculous that we started making fun of it, and then it became who we called each other.
Big Team.
And I remember at one point, Leanne was like, am I going to be a part of big team? And we were like, no, no way. Like, no, we're big team. You're not big. You can be friends with big team, but you can't be a part of big team. Like, we're big team. Yeah. And I was like, that's even rude for you to ask. And then I think she was like, whoa, look at the Pit Viper trying to get in on big team. And then we started calling my wife Pit Viper. And she didn't like that.
Well, so you grew up in Tampa Bay. I mean, from what I know, first of all, congratulations on the Super Bowl win. I know that's probably exciting.
If they care, I mean, is that the team? How could you not care? Fans?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
It made it worth watching, but I mean, not married to the team.
Right.
I am. As a young man who was a Bucks fan when they sucked, I was extremely happy.
Yeah.
Good.
But to me, Tampa, I mean, I was there once for spring training, and I kept thinking to myself, like, I wonder what it must be like to grow up in Tampa. Like, what is there to do?
Well, it revolves around the Bucks a lot. But also you have like Ybor City. Yeah. It's just like lined with bars and clubs and restaurants. So that's kind of what you did. If you went out, you went to Ybor City, okay. Which was also it could be a little shady too. You know,
we grew up, Ybor City was really shady. It was for you.
Bad, yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, you never ventured off the main strip. And then when I started doing stand up, they opened up an improv in Ybor City. And I was like, fuck that. And my dad's like, oh, you should go, buddy. It's actually pretty nice.
Yeah, no, they started redoing a lot.
And now it's like, it's been Disney-fied and it's lost its thumbprint of this authentic, you know, Ybor City was where all the Cuban immigrants came and moved and started rolling cigars. Yeah. And so all their big, the Tampa Improv was a cigar factory. And so it was like literally a big cigar factory.
That's cool.
And so, so it's cool. It's really cool architecture, really cool heritage, but it's kind of been subtracted out with the Wet Willies and the, you know.
Was there a lot of structure growing up, meaning with your parents, or was it pretty free-for-all-y?
I don't know. It wasn't like free-for-all. But we're not like the most structured of people.
I think I got structure.
No, you didn't.
I definitely got fucking structure.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to have.
I didn't get structure.
You got no structure.
I got none.
Yeah, she got such little structure. She would wake up at 2 a.m. and start vacuuming, looking for structure. She would wake up.
What's that noise? You're like, it's just my sister vacuuming.
Oh my god.
Does someone parent me?
I was gonna say
know that I'm here?
It's kind of like a great strategy as a parent. Like, don't do any. It's like the reverse psychology. You know, you end up having like a super structured kid.
Right, fend for yourself.
Right.
Figure it out.
Zero structure. I remember telling my parents, I was like, just ask me to make my bed, and they're like, all right, make your bed. I was like, really want me to. They're like, we really want you to make your bed. And I was the one that cleaned the house.
Oh, like, God. I was like, you're creating a chore chart.
Seriously.
With like your own stars.
Yeah.
She punished herself. I sent myself to my room.
So what did your parents do?
My dad is a lawyer. I really couldn't tell you what my dad does to this day.
He's a lawyer.
No, he is a lawyer. But like, but I tried to explain it to someone and I got it wrong. And then my mom was in a teacher and is now in early childhood development. So there's an analyzation on anything you do. My mom could break it down and figure out why you do that.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah. And yet,
oh, that's fun.
And she's analyzing. A much better grandmother than she was mom. I was telling someone that the other day. I was like, oh, she's like a extremely active. I just said this the other day and they were like, for real? My mom was a very, very active grandma, still is. Literally flies out. During COVID, I had my tour bus pick her up, take her out. They wanted to be here. But as a mom growing up, she wasn't necessarily an active mother. She's going to hate hearing this.
She's going to hate hearing that you're saying it wrong.
Let me just say what I say, okay. And then you correct me.
Okay.
Yeah.
My visualization of mom growing up is looking at her, her looking off into space and going like this.
Yeah, she did do that.
Yeah, like that's like, but I don't remember like getting on the floor and playing with me as a kid.
Well, no, because I think, that was like back in the 70s too.
Yeah.
So it like stuff is totally different now with parenting.
Like now she gets down with the kids. She's playing with the kids. I mean, she literally, when I had kids, she was so fucking active as a grandmother that you're like, that I remember looking at her going and telling my kids, like, this isn't who she is. Like, right. This is an act. And, I don't know what she wants from you guys.
And then you're envious. You're envious. You're like, why didn't you do this with me? Why didn't you, you know, get on the floor and roll around with me?
You wouldn't have wanted that.
You didn't want, yeah, you definitely didn't want my mom rolling around on the ground with you when we were kids. But it's interesting to see how active she is. And then my dad's the opposite. My dad, who was a pretty active dad with kids, he's like literally arm's distance. Like, okay, all right, enough. Who wants to go out and have a cigar and a drink?
Yeah.
And everyone's like...
He finally made it to where he can do that. It's like, I always say, like, what's going to happen when all the kids are out of the house? You're either like devastated that you're an empty nester, or you're just like stoked to party.
Oh,
like, they I built, can go back they, to normal.
They built a new house. Like what? How many years ago?
Five.
They built a house 5 years ago. And I remember I said, why would you do that? And my dad was like, because we're not dead yet. And I went, what? And he goes, we're still living our life, Bert. Like, we want to build a new house. Why can't we? And I was like, I don't know. By the way, funny sidebar story to this. I did the Tampa Improv. I used to do these call and sixty work shows where I'd go in, do a show in the morning. I'd do morning radio, drink on air, and then go to the club at 10 a.m. Tell everyone, call in sick to work. Don't go to work today. Meet me at the Improv. And they were insane. Sell out in seconds. They were insane shows. But I would get hammered drunk. And this show, I don't remember getting off stage. I don't remember getting paid. I don't remember any of it. I know that I gave out like two of my friends' phone numbers on stage, but I don't remember any of it. I don't even know. I wake up in a house I've never been in my entire life. I wake up and it's Tampa and I'm like, what the fuck? I don't recognize anything. I get up and it's a nice house. I'm like, hello? No one's there. I'm like, fucking, where am I? I can't find my phone. I'm still in my jeans. I'm like, son of a bitch. And I start looking around this house. I'm like, oh my God, they've got a picture of my daughter in here. They've got a picture of me in here. Oh my God, the front door opens. It's my dad. It was their new house. I had never been there before. I thought I was in a super stalker's house. And I was like, this is your new house. He's like, oh, this is your first time seeing it? And I was like, well, other than walking through it this morning when I was blackout drunk, yeah. So.
Oh my God. So when you were kids, so what was it like? I mean, were you kind of latchkey? Were your parents gone working all the time?
No, he kind of got dramatic about it.
You
had like the basic structure, but our parents weren't like, do your homework. You need to do your homework. It was like, is your homework done? Okay, cool. We're good.
Yeah. Well, what was the house like? What were the interests? Was it a creative family or was it more like sports oriented? Was it traditional in that way?
I'm interested to hear their answers first and then I'll correct them. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Answer this.
Sports.
Yeah. Sports.
For you.
For me. Yeah. But for you, what was it like for you?
I went to your practices and your games.
And what was it like for you?
I was
alone. I didn't have you guys. So I had my own thing going on.
Yeah.
That was nice. Until they separated. It was all sports. And there wasn't much structure, but it was still like, I look at their parenting compared to mine, and I'm like, I'm doing an awful job. Like, at least we had vegetables. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain things I noticed, like stupid stuff that, like, we never had dessert.
No, we didn't have like, junk
like
food
we
around.
Never, when we went out to eat, we never ordered dessert. We never really had junk food.
Oh,
but like no one forced us to drink water. We were drinking like Diet Cokes at a very young age.
We were like, we were like the opposite. You know, I was thinking about this literally. I was walking with Danny the other day and I'm like, we had so much crap, like Oreos. Mm. We had like we just ate
Golden Grahams, Life cereal.
Just terrible. We had terrible eating habits.
I mean,
yes.
Meanwhile, mom was drinking green juice and being super healthy, but we ate all.
We were
all
like
kinds
eating
of crap.
Fritos.
my dad would make a burger and he would make it rare. Ugh. And you couldn't really give him much pushback because he was like, "You're gonna be fine. Just eat it." And you'd be like, "And now, adversely, I love rare meat. Like I love rare meat. Yeah,
yeah."
So you played sports. What did you play, Bert?
Baseball.
At what position?
All over the map, most predominantly like catcher.
Were you high school ball?
Yep. Played in high school, played all growing up, played in high school. And it's interesting because I speak in hyperbole. So when I say something, it's always going to be up to here, but like, I'm not that active a parent in my daughter's extracurricular life. Like, I'm trying to be kind to myself, but like, I never coached any of their teams, and my dad coached all my teams. I'm on the road a lot, so I seldomly go to that went to their games. But if I was in town, I went to the games. But like, I just missed a lot. And the opposite was my dad. My dad was at coached every team at every game. If he wasn't coaching, at every baseball game. And it's interesting because I thought that's the dad I'd be, and it's not. Mm.
Well,
what, is it? Do you think it's circumstantial though, just because you're on the road, or is this is you just don't have it in you? You know?
No. I first of all, I'm very competitive, and I try to hide that. I don't let people know about it. So early on, when Georgia was playing softball, I had to take a vape pen into the outfield and get in the outfield because I got so angry at the way the coaches were coaching. Because I played like competitive baseball, meaning like went to go play college, was recruited by a couple colleges, like I. And legit know what I'm talking about when I play baseball. And I'm watching a coach fuck with my daughter's swing and I'm losing my shit. And my wife's like, make a vape pen to center field and chill the fuck out and enjoy your daughter's softball.
Annie, so what about you? I mean, what, did you play sports?
I did volleyball for a while, for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I did track. I tried basketball, but I didn't like it at all. It was a little too like aggressive.
And then did you always know, was Bert always the funny guy?
You know, it's hard because you grow up with it. So that's just who he was. Mm. But now looking back, you look and you're like, okay, maybe, I mean, chains and Speedos, like it just, to me, that was just like, oh, that's my brother, you know? Whereas like none of the other kids in the neighborhood were really.
But is comparative to the other kids in the neighborhood, were you like, right, my brother's nuts?
I think what's interesting, I'll tell you a word that you used to say when I was being myself or being a larger version of myself. Annie would go, stop showing off. And it would fucking shut me down. I would be like, I'm trying to get friends for us. We're new to this fucking neighborhood.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a lot of like, you're showing off, or that didn't happen.
That was the other one.
But it wasn't like, none of it was intentional. It just was like me genuinely being like, that's not the story. That's not what happened.
They still do that. They still do that today.
I try and stop myself now because you're the storyteller.
Were you a decent student, Bert? Or were you like, just want to make people laugh and get through this?
Yeah, I was not a good student. I was not. I to this day, I never understood how to take notes. Like, and they were like, all right, take notes. I was like, what part do I write down?
Did you have I was just reading notes here, the levels of anxiety that your dad put upon you. Talk
we
about that
a
little
bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all deal with anxiety.
Why is that? Where does that come from?
Ooh, where does it come from?
These two have probably handled it the best, but she probably has the worst anxiety, I think.
But when we talk about anxiety, are we talking about actual like clinical anxiety where it's, because I had that for almost a year of not being able to leave the house and feeling like sick to my stomach and like losing my fucking mind pretty much, you know? And then of course you did.
I had that 2 years ago after I had my first son. I had it like 6 months after I had him. But I work at Disney, so I was going to work every day, and I knew if I stopped going to work, I would never go back. Mm. So I just white knuckled it.
Wow. So were you going to work anxious at work, trying to your day?
I was going into like conference rooms, shutting the door, crying, calling a psychiatrist. Ugh. Like it was really bad. And then I didn't really know what to label it as, but I was just having panic attacks at work. And then it makes it so much worse when every family member calls you at work to check on you. Mm. I'm like, you guys are making me feel legit crazy now. Like to make sure I'm still around. I was like, can everyone stop checking on me? I'll figure this out.
Do you remember the moment it was triggered? Like, you know, 6 months after the kid and you're like, wow, I feel weird. Or did it hit you like a ton of bricks?
It just hit me. It just hit me out of nowhere. And that's the worst kind where you can't label it. There's nothing that triggered it. You're like, wait, oh my gosh, I really am losing my mind.
Oh my God. I had the same thing. I had the same thing. I was going to Crazy Girls, which is
on La Brea.
In Hollywood. Yeah. On La Brea. Exactly. Yeah. Good for you. And I was walking in and my friend John was ahead of me. And, I felt like my heart just exploded. I mean, I dropped down to a knee and I couldn't breathe. And you know, that I just got flushed with adrenaline and I was just like, oh, and I was like, John, he couldn't hear me. And I got my shit together. And that was the beginning of the end. Honestly, it was that moment that then set it off, you know?
Yeah. And then you just wait for it to happen again.
Yeah. Then it's just like waiting.
Oh yeah. God. But at some point you have to, I would think in
order to really, cause I've had anxiety, but I've never suffered from anxiety, you know? So I would think that if you do, and at some point you have to kind of do the work to figure out where the.
That is totally coming from someone who's never suffered from anxiety.
Right. But you have to kind of distill it down to like where it could be coming from. Yeah. I mean, in order to really understand it.
Or you could just start drinking.
Right. Or you medicate.
Yeah, like it's the problem problem with panic a lot of times. I'll say this from growing up. I had them when I was younger and I didn't know what they were. So like I didn't know what they were. And I would just be like, I'd go into my parents' room and be like, I'm watching Johnny Carson and Johnny Carson's yelling at me. Like, I feel like he's yelling and his head's real small. I feel like his head's tiny and he's shouting at me. And the parts of my toes right here where the nail meets the skin, I feel like it's folding in. And my dad would be like, you're fine. Go to bed. Like clearly. And I don't think there's an over exaggeration. My parents weren't uncaring, but they just did. They didn't know it was anxiety. They were like, you're just go back to bed. You're going to be fine. And so, I mean, I remember one time very candidly, I had a realization that one day my dad would die. I was watching TV and someone died. And I thought, holy shit, one day my dad's going to die and I can't stop that. And I start spiraling out. I'm probably 10 years old. I know that because I was sleeping in your room. I didn't start sleeping by myself until I was probably like 14. Okay.
Oh,
like,
wow. Really?
Oh yeah. I slept with my parents up until I was 10. And then at 10, we moved in a new house and then me and her slept in the same room.
All of us.
Yeah. And then when I went to high school, I was like, maybe I should probably start, you know, get my own room. But I remember realizing my dad was going to die and I went into his room. I was 10. I had to be 10 years old. I went into his room and I woke him up and very accurately, what is it like if you wake dad up? What's his reaction?
He jumps.
He's motherfucker, cocksucker. What the fuck? Yeah. And I said, Dad, I just had a weird thought that one day you're gonna die and I can't stop it. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, and you're gonna die too. Go back to bed. And I went, I'm dying? And all of a sudden I'm like, fuck. And then and for me it was the actualization that one day everything's gonna go black and I can't stop it. And so panic attacks have gone through our family and I think we've all dealt with them and coronavirus has made it exponentially worse.
Even for you now, currently?
Oh, currently. Yeah. You wake up every morning and do like a, okay, throat feels good. No temperature, no fever. Oh, yeah.
No, but then I go, does it feel good? No,
does it? Is that allergies? Oh shit. Let's go get tested.
Wait, where did you guys get this? You guys
where did this come from?
So it's almost like you have this collective anxiety.
Right. It's like codependent anxiety.
We all call each other and we're like, you're fine, but you should go get tested.
Right. So and it also sounds like you were super close. I mean, you didn't leave her room. You shared a room together.
Yeah.
Were you protective of your sisters?
I think so, but I was also, I wanted the protection also.
That's a good question. Were you protective of Bert?
But your personality, it didn't seem like it needed protecting.
My personality was like sink or swim. I realized like first grade, I had horrific anxiety attacks and that my dad dropped me off and I realized, what if he dies going to work and I never see him again? And I had horrible separation anxiety. And so I cried aggressively all through the first week of first grade every day to the point where Mrs. Thompson had to sit me at the front of the class and at a desk facing the class and hold my hand while she taught the class.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just cry, looking at the other kids going, what if they don't come back? And then slowly they'd be like, our parents aren't coming back.
You send the whole fucking class into a massive anxiety attack.
Yeah. And so I think my personality was, and I would say Annie is a shy person. And I think inherently I'm shy, but I think my personality is almost like, I don't get the luxury of being shy. I need to start being somebody. I need to start, I don't know. I was trying to explain this to my daughter, Isla, taking her to school the other day. And I was like, hey, first day of high school sucks. They were doing like a distanced thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, first day of high school sucked. And I was trying to tell her my first day of high school. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. She goes to an all-girls Catholic high school. I said, it's never as bad. You think it's bad for you? It's bad for everyone. Everyone feels the same. And I told her, and this is how bad my parenting is. We're driving
so
on the
101. You're going to die someday.
worse. I said, listen, my first day of school, I went to all boys Catholic high school. I didn't know any of the kids. I knew like four of them. The day I get there, one of them is chewing tobacco, Pat Fagan. And I'm like, okay, clearly he's older than me.
Well, you grew up with him.
Yeah, but he was chewing tobacco. And I'm like, I don't chew tobacco. I'm not that grown up. Like I'm still a child. And I go, first period was PE. I'm like, I'm good at sports. I'll just get into a game with some kids and that's how I'll make friends. And these kids were all Cuban with mustaches dunking. And I'm like, fuck, I'm not even good at sports at the school. And so we go into the locker room and he's like, hit the showers. And I'm like, hold on, we got to get naked in front of each other now? Like, I'm not ready for that. And I look in the showers and there's 10th graders, 11th graders, 12th graders, and 9th graders. And I'm 14 years old. There's 18 to 14 in this thing. And I'm terrified.
That sounds terrible.
And now Isla's like, good God, what happened? I said, well, what I didn't realize is all the other boys were terrified too. So that's the lesson I'm trying to teach her. I go, just as scared as you were, you're in your head, they're in their head too, baby.
But it's so funny, just going back for a second, you know, that I remember as a young kid, probably around the same age that you were, that I would think about what death was and that it was just pure blackness. And I couldn't wrap my head around this idea that I wouldn't exist anymore and where would I be? And I it used to drive me insane where I'd have to shake my cobwebs out and start over because it would take me down a rabbit hole.
You're talking about every morning at 4 a.m. for me. 4 a.m. I wake up and I think one day it'll be black.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, really? Black.
This is so dark. Yeah. Why do you have to think about it? It's just a reality. Now let it go.
Oh, yeah, but whatever, for whatever. Yeah.
Or you need to like go do ayahuasca or something.
Yeah, man. That could go one of two ways.
Go on a journey,
this is
man.
Me taking ayahuasca. Sip, sip, sip. I don't think I want this inside me anymore.
Do you guys smoke weed or eat weed at all?
I haven't during the pandemic really, cause I'm trying to preserve my lung capacity.
Right.
Just in case.
Well, I'm just wondering it, cause you know, sometimes that helps anxiety. I mean, sometimes it can exacerbate it, but other times it can actually settle you down, you know?
Yeah. I have a friend who says, I like to do it cause I like to confront my anxiety. And I'm like, I definitely don't feel like confronting anxiety.
Oh God, no.
I'd like to find the one that settles you down.
Yeah, I keep going into weed stores going, do you have one like Xanax?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you can take Xanax. I go, yeah, I don't want, I already have that. I need the one that feels like Xanax.
Right. Yeah. But Cotty, did you get through it?
I did. I went to a CBT therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy for about 6 months.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a game changer.
A total game changer.
Isn't it crazy? Our brains are so fucking nuts.
Now, Cotty, when you were born, so you're 10 years younger than your brother, 8 from Annie. And, you know, did it change the dynamic for you guys when Cotty was born? Like, was it very different because she was such a baby? And were you helpful? Were you more helpful to your parents?
I was. I mean, not that you weren't.
No, yeah.
They were good together. I was 7, 7, 8, So it was like I had like a baby doll, you know? So that was the fun thing for me, was it's like, ooh, there's a baby in the house, you know? You two were more like, you guys were pretty close.
We were
really
close growing up.
Yeah, we were.
Such a big age difference. Like, I remember when I had separation anxiety in fourth grade, that's when you went to college. Mom and dad were like, if you can make it through the week, like do the full week, then you can go visit Bert in Tallahassee this weekend. And looking back now, I'm like, that was so selfless of him, because I would never.
Oh, whenever he would go back to school.
Yeah.
My parents had to take her to the gas station down the street because they would pull over so that she could say goodbye again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. We were really close. Kati being born brought a lot of joy to our family, I think. I think our family was fun. We were good, but we were like typical boy, daughter family. I see families now that they just have a boy and a girl. And I go, I always think you're not going to go for one more. Like, like two girls, two boys, a different dynamic. But with us, when Kati was born, all of a sudden our family was like a lot funnier, a lot funner. Like, because Kati was a little different of a person. And to this day, I always thought Kati was the funniest person in our family. Yeah. Without a doubt.
No, I am.
But she, and she was very grown up, and the way she would, like, my friends would come over and they would, like, Kati would kind of fuck with us. And my friends were in high school, and she would, you know, she would say, it was like a perfect example. I took her to a party in college when she was maybe in fourth grade. And we put a fake monkey around her neck, and she went and collected money for the keg, and she collected like $400. And we were like, oh, we have a gold mine. And so we just took her to parties with a monkey around her neck, and she just made cash. And then she'd call up like on a Sunday and be like, hey, in Tallahassee, she's in fourth grade. Hey, we're at the bowling alley. And I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah.
She's like, yeah, we're at the bowling alley. I'm here with the Tridelts. You should come over and bowl with us. All of a sudden, all my friends are like, fuck. She was brought a lot of levity to our family.
It's weird. Like, I met one girl at one of your parties late night, and she's like, do you want to come to our house and hang out? And then I went to the Tridell house the next day.
She moved into the Tridell house.
Like, and that's so weird that I was in fourth grade.
It is very weird.
It is pretty crazy.
Where was mom and dad?
At home? Yeah, it was weird because
they would let me fly. Remember that?
Yeah.
I think it was like the time was so different, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're at college, Bert. You were considered the top partier at the number one.
I read that. What does that even mean?
In the country.
Yeah. Rolling
Stone. Now, is this like something we're proud of?
Yeah. It's the reason I'm sitting here today. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I actually tried to move past it when I moved to Hollywood. And I had a buddy very wisely one time say to me, he said, hey, man, I noticed that you're like kind of like trying to ignore that part that article was written. It was in Rolling Stone magazine. They wrote a 6.5-page article about me, calling me the number one party animal at the number one party school. And it was a really big deal. Oliver Stone optioned the rights to my life. I moved to New York. Will Smith discovered me within doing stand-up for 6 months, mostly because of this article. And it gave me a career. I started doing television and had my own TV show. Followed by another, you know, development deal after TV show. And my buddy said to me, I feel like you're really kind of like pushing this article away. Like you don't want to acknowledge it. And I said, well, I'm past that. That's not who I am. He goes, no. You should never think that. He goes, if you hadn't moved to LA, I wouldn't be in LA. And he goes, and you wouldn't have moved to LA without that article. So you need to be grateful that that article was written.
Cool. Let's go back for 2 seconds. Like, this article was written about you in Rolling Stone. How does this happen? Like, how does Rolling Stone write an article about the number one party or at the number one party school? How do they find you?
So they were trying to write an article about Florida State. And so they called like four people at Florida State and they said, we want to write an article about Florida State. It had been just voted the number one party school in the nation. Mm-hmm. And they're like, do you have someone we could stay with? And it happened that the four people they called were all friends of mine who thought I was fucking with them. So they called, they said, oh, call Bert. So this guy at Rolling Stone called and my buddy Blair answered. I was in the middle of a bong hit. We were about to go play Frisbee golf and he pissed himself. My name's Eric Hedegaard. I'd like to do an article about the school. I need a liaison. Everyone's recommended you. Would you be cool with me staying with you for a week? And I exhaled my bong hit and I was like, sure. He was like, were you just doing a bong hit? And I was like, yeah. He was like, dude, you're perfect. So then he lives with me for a week. We party a lot because I don't know that I don't know the article is going to be about me. Yeah. They go to write the article and then they just kind of thought it would be a better article if it was about a kid. Mm. And so I was 26 years old. I was 25. I'd spent 6.5 years in college. And so they just they just wrote an article about me. And it changed my life overnight. Like overnight.
Wow.
Yeah. It gave me the confidence to try stand up. I tried stand up. And then, like I said, everything kind of made sense to move to New York and start doing stand up. And, you know, 6 months in, Will Smith discovered me. And it was and then all of a sudden I was off the races.
And did Will Smith discover you at a club?
Yeah, his people did. His people saw me and they're like, I think Will would like you. And I've told the story a number of times, but then I met him at a studio and we hung out for the day. We went and saw a movie together.
What did you guys think when that was happening for your brother? Did you think that he was going to have the kind of career that he had and has?
No, I remember you getting offered like a job to be a radio host in Tampa or something. Dad's like, you should have taken it. You should have taken it.
It sounds weird. I'm speaking respectfully, but I don't know if you guys can wrap your head around how foreign the idea of being in the entertainment business is to the average person. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that you would move, that you would have the balls to move to New York. I mean, I think I do this for a fact. If I ever run into anyone from Tampa in LA, I take a second extra to be like, I never run into people from Florida here. Like there's a young lady went to a same high school Cotty did, Academy of the Holy Names, and she works at the Starbucks by my house. And I take a minute to be like, hey, don't give up. Like no one ever does this, you know? And so the idea that you could, my dad, I remember when the first time I made more money than my dad, and he was like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know why people are paying you to do this at all. Like, I can't give you any advice. Like, I don't know how to parent this. Sure. You know? And so I can definitely, it's almost like one, not crack the code for Hollywood, but once you work in Hollywood, you go, oh, you just got to not give up. That's it. That's all it is. And not be a dick. Don't hurt people's feelings. Just always show up on time. Be friendly. Don't get too drunk. Have a good time. Like there's something, the cheat codes aren't that difficult.
Yeah.
But so many people come out here with so many issues that like regular people look at it and go, and we grew up very regular. The idea that I remember seeing myself on TV for the first time. You don't know what that's like. Meaning like the idea that you got on television, like I was walking by a television and I was on television and I was like, shut the fuck up. I'm looking at me on television. Like that's a mind fuck, mind fuck.
What was your experience seeing your brother for the first time? Do you remember what that was?
I didn't think much of the Rolling Stone article. I was like, meh.
It just kind of I remember my alarm went off for work and it was about like they were talking about you on the radio. And I was like, what? That's a weird way to wake up. And then I just went to work. And then like the FedEx guy came in and they were like, hey, are you the same Kreischer? And so that happens. Like, so that starts happening in life where they go.
But you have no, you didn't have any like joy or excitement or anything for him. You're just sort of like, whatever.
Nah, just dead like, inside. Eh.
Yeah. Like, okay. No.
I like, nobody like, cares. That's great. Like, this is weird.
I mean, I remember in college you were on the X show and I went down to the lobby because I didn't have cable in my room. And I was like, this is too hard, but I'm happy for him. And then I moved out here. You know what? It didn't start resonating for me until recently. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until recent. But it's honest. Like it was recently that I was like, wherever I drive, I see billboards now. And I'm like, that's weird. I wonder how that must feel like to be him.
Yeah.
What was interesting is I remember moving out here. I moved out here at 22, right when I graduated. And he told me, just go work at an agency. Work at an agency for 2 years. And then after that, you can do whatever you want. And everyone kept telling me when I moved out here, they're like, you're going to be a publicist. Just go to work at a publicity firm. And it irked me where I was like, I never want to be in publicity. I work in a publicity department now, but it irked me. And I was like, no, I'm never going to work in publicity. But it's a weird feeling when you are raised in a normal town and then you move to LA. And you start noticing the competitiveness amongst like even normal peers at like agencies or management companies that it's unsettling. And I always remember watching Bert help his friends and being genuinely happy for people when they succeeded. And I was like, that's so rare. I felt like that was so rare just in Los Angeles. So it always made me happy. Now that he's has it for himself, I'm like, you know what? That really paid off, that he always wanted to help people get jobs, or, you know, like I was like,
but you're not like genuinely happy for him.
But I do not feel that way. No, but I was like, that does pay off. But yeah, so I was like, you know.
I mean, I'm genuinely happy for you. So you busted happy. Your ass to get you where did. You are.
Yeah.
And we would have fun with you when we were, you know, visiting you in New York and changing our sleep schedule to be at a comedy club all night. But you know what I mean? Like, you really busted your ass. So it's been cool to see you evolve to where you are now.
Mm.
You know?
When you went to New York, Annie, what were you doing?
Oh, where was I?
I have no idea. Hawaii.
I was in school in Hawaii. Ooh. I went to a few schools and then landed in Hawaii to kind of wrap it all up.
Was it great?
Oh yeah.
I like the way you put that. That's good.
Yeah, I had to wrap it all up. And then I moved out here.
So did you guys all come out like sort of one by one to LA? I mean, and this is where home is now.
Yeah. He came out first.
Right.
And then I came out maybe a year or two later.
Yeah.
And then Cotty came out a year later after I came out.
Mm.
And you guys are all
like pretty tight right now.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning you get to see each other all the time. Do you make it a point to be together and you know?
Yeah. I would say probably more than the average siblings. Mm-hmm. When they first moved out, they moved in together down the street from me and my wife. And they were like,
no, I lived by myself for a year. When you had Georgia, and I was with you guys, I think, every day.
Every day.
Every day. And then she moved out. I mean, I was still with you guys a lot.
Oh, that's right. You guys lived over there. But they would, like, we would Monday nights, we'd go to their house and watch Monday Night Football, and they'd come over, we'd grill.
Yeah.
And I would say, honestly, my daughters are way more affectionate, 100% more affectionate with them, and have a very, very, very close relationship with them, mm-hmm. more so than with me. I mean, my daughters don't hug me, but with them, if either of them walk in the house, both my daughters go to them immediately. Like,
aww, they love their aunties.
Yeah.
Does everyone have kids?
Cotty does.
I do not.
Cotty, how many do you have?
Two. Three years old and 4 months old.
Aww.
I have baby Bert. We call him
Baby Bert. Oh, do you?
He's 100%. Bert's like, how did I not have this kid? It is Bert.
But it's not that. It's like some. It's the good parts, but it's a lot of the parts where you're like, oh, that's something Bert does that drives me nuts, and now I'm living with it.
It's karma.
Amazing.
Sakara, this is our favorite. If you've been a listener of ours in the last year, you know how much we love Sakara. This is a nutrition company. It focuses on overall wellness, starting with what you eat. So they give you organic, ready-to-eat meals. They're made with plant-based ingredients designed to boost your energy, improve your digestion, and get your skin glowing. And it's a menu of creative, chef-crafted, ready-to-eat breakfasts, lunches, dinners. They change weekly, so you'll never get bored. And then it's delivered fresh to your door anywhere in the U.S. Along with the meals, they also offer their daily wellness essentials like supplements and herbal teas. So it's a full holistic approach. Oliver's favorite, their best-selling metabolism super powder. I could use some of that right now, I must say. I'm feeling a little bloated. And it's made with organic raw cacao. It works to boost energy, eliminate bloating, minimize sugar cravings, and reduce fatigue. All things I think everybody needs a little bit of help with.
And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/sibling. Or enter code sibling at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/sibling to get 20% off your first order. Sakara.com/sibling.
What What is your process when you're doing your stand-up?
I'll find something. A lot of times it used to be I'd mishear things. A lot of times I won't notice it. It'll be something like Leanne or them will say, oh, this is going in your act. And then I'll be like, oh shit. Yeah, it is. Like I'll walk right past it. But usually it's like a story will happen or something will happen. And I'll have to take it on the road and really work it out on stage a lot. I'm trying to think of a good example of something.
Do you write shit? I mean, do you write down or do you just you put it in your phone or you got memory? You just memory stuff.
I write some stuff like, and then I'll put it down and then it's a little seeds. You plant little seeds all over. And then when you start to work an hour, you take these big tentpole stories of that, you know, work, or sometimes you write a joke. I'm not really much of a joke guy. Mm-hmm. I'm more stories.
Story guy. Yeah.
And sometimes like little things, like I misread words. Sometimes I'm dyslexic. So I'll read ingenious and indigenous or muscles or as Muslims. And so, I little things like that. And when you build an hour, little things like that add in great on big stories. So if you can get the laughs per minute up on a big story, but stuff will happen and then you'll just write it down. I'm trying to see if there's anything I wrote down.
Do your sisters tell them straight up? I mean, are you like, Bert, that's no good. That sucks. I mean, are you involved in at all in his world of writing jokes, or does he try them out on you guys at all, or no?
Not really.
No, not really. No.
That's probably a better thing.
I don't think, like, my dad's never seen me perform live. I don't think.
Really?
Yeah, he won't.
He don't want to watch me.
Why is that?
Because it makes him very uncomfortable.
Makes him nervous.
It, like, he would absolutely hate to do it himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes, like, he almost experiences the anxiety of being forced to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, so if anything on TV, anything, he'll have somebody else watch it. And once you say, no, Dad, it was good, he'll go, oh, okay. And then he'll
that's
think
so
about
interesting.
It. But I don't think he's watched any of your specials.
He hasn't. Yeah.
Would you be, if your dad was coming to see a show, would that mess you up, or would you be excited about something like that?
It doesn't even register. I wouldn't. Yeah, because he just never has. And it's almost like if you talk to a kid who grew up without a father, and he's like, yeah, I don't know, I just never had one. And mm-hmm. I don't mean like it's that dramatic, but like,
right,
he's never watched me perform, so it doesn't matter. And if he did watch me, that, I guess that would be fine. I've done it so long now that it wouldn't affect the way I perform at all.
But you don't care one way or another.
No, I don't care. No. Whatever makes him happy. If it makes him uncomfortable to watch me, and I imagine it would make me uncomfortable to watch one of my daughters do stand up about me. That's the other thing is, like, when I do stand up, when you talk about my process, I was explaining to someone, however I remember a story, I just remember the funny parts. I don't remember some of the details that maybe are important in a story. Like, I just remember the shit that made me laugh, and that's the part of the story I tell back to you. And sometimes with my dad, he'll be like, that never happened. And I'm like, no, it totally happened. He's like, no, like, I remember one time I was telling a story about first grade, and I said my dad drove a van, and he goes, never had a van. And I was like,
he did have a van.
He did have a fucking van. But the thing I remember is the fucking van. He doesn't remember the van at all.
Oh, God.
And so yeah. but oddly enough, the last time I was in Tampa, I was doing the Tampa Theater, and they had planned out that my dad would come run out on stage. He was in the green room. He'd come out on stage, rip his shirt off, and get a picture with me. And you could feel him shaking. And they videotaped it. And so he came out, ripped his shirt off, put his arm around me, his arm's trembling, gives me a kiss, and he goes, I love you. And then he gets off stage, and he was high. I mean, he was, and they had the camera on him, and he was like, ah, like he really felt he was like, they went, like, and then he called me. He's like, they went crazy when I took my shirt off. And I was like, yeah, they did.
You're like, now you know.
I didn't know
Dad.
He was going to do it. Yeah.
You're like, now you know why I do this.
You were the first comedian to do all the sort of drive-ins and socially distanced shows. How was that? Was it weird?
The first one was weird. The first one was weird, but it was so beautiful. It was in North Carolina. It was a slice of Americana pie. It was a grass drive-in tiered in the middle of a rock quarry. It was in the middle of nowhere, trees everywhere, beautiful sunset. and everyone was tailgating. Everyone had their chairs out. They had big inflatable couches, beds in the back of their trucks. One dude filled up his truck with water. And as a performer, I tore through my hour in like 35 minutes because I wasn't getting the response I get normally in a theater. But then as you start doing them more and more, you get more and more comfortable with what you understand the response to be, meaning the laughs I need to hear to know I'm doing well. You just had to change your bar on where it needed to be. And I ended up loving it. And I mean, this sounds a little virtue signally, but you know, I ended up loving it. And it was offering work to, you know, 20 people a night that would work on my show, because we had a big production, and to my tour bus driver, all my friends. And it was allowing people an opportunity to get out of the house safely and feel like they were a part of something. My sisters came out. I did the Hollywood
Rose Bowl.
I did the Rose Bowl. My sisters came out and they were like, and they called me right when they were leaving the parking lot. And they're like, that was so cool to be able to get you say what you said, but
it was awesome. You felt normal. Like for someone who had been quarantined, we'd been hardcore quarantined because I was pregnant. And it was shortly after I had Lola, and it was like so nice. It was like all we needed. Just the 2 to 3 hours of being out, and even you didn't leave your car, it was just all you needed to feel like you had social interaction again.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Yeah. We went to a drive-in at my daughter's school the other night, and I fucking loved it. And I've been doing them. I've done like, I think 60 cities. I did a ton of them. I did like four runs this summer. And I went to my first drive-in and we watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I had such a fun fucking time with my family. Like we all brought subs and we were laughing. And I was just thought to myself, if I was drinking, this would be a blast.
Right. I know. I know what you mean.
Kind of want to get into some of the things you guys are working on. And I mean, Bert, you've got Bert Cast, the Go Big Show, the Birdie Boy Tour. I mean, what else do you have going on?
Well, what's Cabin? So what is that show?
Oh, Cabin is my Netflix series. I just invited, it was like a retreat into the woods for me to take care of my mind, body, and spirit, my soul. Mm-hmm. And so I'd invite comedians and people, sometimes just famous people I didn't even know, really. I had Caitlyn Jenner come. And we'd spend the day in the cabin doing stuff like crystal therapy or sound baths or coffee enemas or polar plunges.
Fun.
And it was a blast. It was really a blast. And you know, I brought a really eclectic group of the funniest people, I think, along with some great people like Joel McHale and Kaylee Cuoco and Miss Pat. And it was a blast.
That's an awesome idea. You know, I like this whole unscripted world. It's really fun. I'm sort of dabbling in it right now myself.
The more closer we can get unscripted projects to be what we're doing right now, the better they are. And I think really in essence, what The Cabin was a very elaborate podcast in a weird way with cameras following you around. And I think why it worked so well was so many comedians are so comfortable on podcasts. Like I, as a guest of a podcast, I know what I want when I'm a host.
Right.
Yeah. So as you tell things, it's interesting to do this with my sisters because I've been on so many podcasts. I mean, I've been doing podcasts for 10 years. And so it's interesting when they tell a story or when you tell a story, I immediately go, all right, I gotta move things forward. I understand that I want to make sure that I give them everything they need. And that was what The Cabin was a lot of people that got podcasts and had done a lot of podcasts. So when the cameras were on, they treated it in that energy, that space of like, I'll give you everything you need. I'm not going to stop talking. I don't need you to cue me. I got this. I can play with you. We'll have fun.
How much of it was like, you know, I know it's unscripted, but how much of it was, okay, we're going to set this up and we got to do this, this and that. Or was it just real free for all unscripted stuff?
I would say it's all free for all. There was like, this is the, you know, you would say scripted, like at one point I waxed my asshole and
I've done that twice, by the way.
I've done it twice too. I was waxing my asshole and my friend Nikki Glazer is a comic, was walking up the stairs and
your sisters
was,
just didn't. do anything when you said that. You're like, oh, yeah, I waxed my asshole twice. And your sister.
Total straight face. Like,
not even really phased.
No, it was unscripted. But in a moment like that, when I'm about to wax my asshole and I know Nikki's walking in and I know she's my friend, I know my boundaries, but I still want her to feel comfortable on mm-hmm. a set and around with people filming her. I had to go, Nikki, like from a different room. It's Bert. You're about to see my asshole. I would love for you to be a little shocked when you see it, but I want you to make the choice whether or not you'd like to see my asshole because I want it to be your choice. And she was like, I appreciate that, Bert. I'd like to see your asshole. I was like, all right. And I was like, that was about as scripted as we got. Oh,
that's so amazing. Funny.
Okay, ready? Let's do the speed round. So one word to describe Bert from each sister.
Big words.
The girls are like, oh, shit, I don't know.
Generous.
Hey.
That's like a good one.
Oh. Generous.
Very generous.
Sensitive.
Very sensitive.
Oh. Very sensitive.
Very sensitive.
Okay, one word to describe Annie.
Grounded.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I mean, you're the most normal of us all.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Oh, really?
We are completely broken compared to you.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Annie's big thing is just a,
Yeah, no, well, she does feel like this sort of grounding energy over there on that side of the frame. You know, she's like, she's cool, like cool as a cucumber, it feels. Uh-huh.
If one of my sisters had to call me to tell me my father was dead, I'd want it to be Annie.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Connie, how do you feel about that?
Back to dad dying.
Okay, yeah. It always comes back around to that. Okay, one word to describe Connie.
Cool.
Funny.
Cool.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Like you're
I
cool.
mean, not temperature-wise.
No, I figured.
Hopefully. I don't know. You're cool. I'm cool. All right, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I would not describe her as cool. Kati is 10 times funnier than I am.
Very funny.
Really?
Ten times funnier than I am, and
like
when they came over to clean my closet, because my closet was a mess. So they came over and they're like, we're gonna help you clean your closet. They did the same thing to my man cave, and she's very quick with her wit. Like I got a pair of these. I don't even know what you said. These shoes that were just like orthopedic shoes that ultra marathoners use to run, but they make your feet look like duck feet.
All right.
And Cottie just looked at me and goes, what are you going to be doing? Kissing walls with that? And I was like, what? She's like, there's boots you're wearing. Like, very quick witted.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you put that into use at all? Or is that just, no. I mean, as far as, no, you don't.
No, never.
I tried never. So hard. I was like, come out here. This is called nepotism. I will get you in this business. I will get you opening. You're a cute young girl. You can get spots everywhere. I will help you with your material. Get you up and running. Trust me. And she was like, nope. Last thing I want.
I mean, yeah, I get it. If you guys could all think of one word together that would describe your relationship, what would it be?
Unhealthy.
Our relationship unbreakable.
Yeah, pretty much, definitely.
Do you guys fight ever? I mean, or not really?
Never.
Not really. No. Even like we had a Thanksgiving where everyone was fighting at the table.
Oh yeah.
And
that was so awkward.
Every Thanksgiving.
We fought
this Thanksgiving because Dad was opening nice wine and he's like, he just guzzles
it.
You got all sensitive and you're like, I'll drink the shit wine.
Dramatic.
My dad opened a nice bottle of wine and then he was like, well, you gotta sip it. You're not gonna just guzzle it, are you? And I said, well, give me the cheap wine because I want to enjoy my night. He's like, why am I even open up the expensive wine?
Yes.
And then I was like, fine, I'll have the fucking expensive wine. He's like, but don't guzzle it. And I go, don't tell me how to drink. And
Who would your parents say was the naughtiest child who broke the most rules?
Annie. No, Cottie. What? No, it's Cottie. Cottie. It's Cottie. Hey. It's Cottie. It's definitely Cottie.
100%. Oh, really?
Cottie stole a car at like 13. Yeah.
Wow. Cottie.
Well, not a car.
I feel like Cottie's sitting over there like she's got a badass vibe, but she's kind of the quiet assassin in a way. You know, like,
well,
she,
I think they're just so used to Bert talking all the time that they just yeah. they just like they know they're gonna say something and Bert's gonna take over.
Yeah,
pretty much. Here's the deal: if you're going to a wedding and you're sitting with the Kreischers, here's what you want. If you're sitting with us, If you want to have a fucking time of your life, where you're going to wake up and go, oh my God, that was the greatest night I've ever had. I can't wait to look on Instagram and see what I did. You want to sit next to me. Okay. If you do not like the bride and groom and you want to talk shit about them throughout the entire night and laugh hysterically, you want to sit next to Cotty.
Okay.
If you are sitting the bride and groom's brother next to someone and you want that brother to go away and go, man, that was a great wedding, sit him next to Annie. Because Annie is just a generous, kind person. Cotty's the person that you can, she will trash someone with you, like roast someone with you, and it's hilarious. And I'm the person that is going to get you shirtless on a table.
Right.
And you'll be like, oh my God.
What a trio. I love that.
So great. I love that. That's such a perfect way of like getting to know you guys, you know, or describing what it is like getting to know you guys. Okay. Who was the big tattletale?
I don't think any of us were tattletales, but Bert definitely lets things slip easier. I think it's
okay. Yeah, I fuck up on accident.
But not in a tattletale where it's just like, why would you ever say that?
Yeah.
I'm the person that gets interrogated and they're like, you know, they're talking about you. I was like, they're talking about me? Well, let me tell you what they did. And they're like, and then I get back in the cell and they're like, you didn't say anything, right? And I was like, right, we didn't say anything.
Yeah, you have the tendency to stir the pot.
That's like,
yeah.
That's like in Goonies when Chunk is like, when they're like, you know, tell us everything. And he's like, when I was four.
That's me.
Who was the most anxious kid?
Oh, easy. Cotty.
Cotty.
And then adult or now? Like right now.
I think it's a tie between me and you.
Not even close.
Really? See, my anxiousness is weird because I power through a lot of it and just like I just go, like I had a problem flying and I went to the doctor and was like, I have a problem flying. He was like, when was the last time you flew? I said, yesterday. He goes, then you don't have a problem flying. And I was like, oh, cool. I guess I'll just drink at airports. And he was like, yeah, you can do that.
Great doctor. Great doctor.
Who's this fucking doctor?
Oh, man. Okay, who, which sibling has the weirdest habits?
Bert.
It's got to be me. Yeah. It's got to be me. I'm a weird person. I collect knives, but I have knives and hatchets all over the place. I'm a very weird person, I think.
That's cool to me.
Annie, do you have any?
No, not really.
I just have one. Not that I can. What is it? I put toilet paper over the hole every time.
Oh, you're afraid of snakes in the toilet.
Yeah.
You're afraid of snakes in the toilet.
No.
It's a big Florida thing.
It's just Florida thing.
Right.
So you put toilet paper over the hole so you can't. So
just
like,
one square. So every, if it were to come up, every I guess it would be single. Blinded.
Time.
Yeah, and I can't shit in a porta potty because I think I'm afraid a rattlesnake's gonna bite me in the ass. Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
Wow. I guess if you put the square over, the snake comes up, and then he can't see because he's just like, ah, shit.
Which is the most extroverted? Sometimes this is a surprising question.
Not that surprising.
It's not that surprising.
Yeah,
okay.
No.
So you're overshare. I need you to like me. I want you to walk away going, God damn it, that was an exceptional human being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I have a problem with that, I think. And in doing that, I strike up conversations with people that you shouldn't talk to. Like just,
oh my God,
I overshare.
Is your wife like, let's go. Bert.
So, yeah. And certain things, I'm a very curious person. So like, if you tell me something that I find interesting, I can't let go of it. I chew on it nonstop.
Yeah, you just have to ask every question.
Yeah.
When you were kids, what would you have thought each other would have done or been for a living?
I knew you wouldn't be sitting in an office.
I thought you'd be in an office.
I thought you'd be in an office,
and I never thought you'd be in an office. I never thought you'd do what you're doing now. Like that's the last thing. Not at all. I kind of thought I would be like sell something, like sell cars or something. Because I'm good with people, I'm not good at selling things. But I thought like coming out of college is I was like, I don't know what I'll do. I guess I'll sell carpets in East Georgia.
Yeah, you're like a people person. You're just
right.
Connecting with people.
I thought Anne would work with like dolphins or something.
Yeah, I thought Annie would be working with dolphins.
Yeah, Annie, what do you do, Annie? I haven't even asked you that.
I'm a nanny.
Oh,
that's fun. How old are the kids that you're working with?
Well, I just stopped working for a family.
Oh, I mean, not to toot her own horn, but Annie would never tell you anything about herself. She's very, Annie would rather hear you talk about yourself than tell her about herself.
But what's that like, though? You know, I mean, leaving a family after such a long time. I mean, is there heartbreak that goes along with that?
Well, no, because I'm still in contact.
You are. Okay.
And it's not like I nannied friends of theirs, had twins when I had first moved out here, maybe a year or two after I'd moved out here. And it was just something that I kind of like fell into, you know? So they had twins and I was with the twins for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
You know? And I'm still like, now they have like phones and Instagram. Right. So I'm like still, I can still text and talk to them.
We used to call her Zay Zay because she's like Xanax to people. She's very relaxing. Mm-hmm. So we would call her Zay Zay. And that's what my daughters call her, is Zay Zay. And she's now like this aunt to like three other families that where the kids literally consider her their aunt, aunt. And like I said, the people that she has worked for, the people who have asked her to come work for are people where I'm like, oh my God, get that job. And then tell me everything about that person. And she's like,
yeah,
that's not what I do. we went, me and my wife had to shoot something on Saturday. And my oldest daughter was
birthday party.
Had to go to a socially distanced birthday party. And my youngest daughter, she's like, I'll just stay home by myself. We're like, no, that's not happening. You're 14. You're not. She's like, Dad, what's the worst that can happen? I was like, you're not predicting the worst. That's why. Like, you don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know the guy that knocks on the door. Help, I'm hurt. Let open the door. I'm bleeding. I need help. And you open it. He's like, you're not your mind, little girl. And
anxiety is wild.
It's
awesome. It's so great.
And she goes, well, can I just have Zay Zay, have like a Zay Zay day where I just hang out with Zay? And we were like, yeah. And so she just hung out with her for the day and loved it and was like in hog heaven.
You know, Bert, just you're such an open book, right? You overshare. You know, is what you see what you get, man? Or is there something that you keep for yourself that people don't know about, or a personality trait or something that you just hold on to, you know? Or are you just balls out? No.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, what you see is what you get. Warts and all. Like, I'm not a really good listener. So like, I remember my best friend is a comedian, is Tom Segura. And we have a podcast and we've been best friends for a very long time. And he said something to me the other day and I was like, oh, how many sisters do you have? And he was like, how do you not know? And I was like, I don't know. You got one, right? And he was like, wait, how many do you think I have? I was like, I couldn't tell you. I don't really pay attention that much. And he's like, I know everything about you. How do you not know this about me? And I was like, I'm just focused on you, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. What was your first celebrity crush, all of you?
Probably Wonder Woman.
Oh, Linda Carter?
Yeah.
Are you shitting me, dude? That's me, like 100%.
Wait, who was your first celebrity crush?
Jordan, New Kids on the Block.
Jordan, New Kids on the Block.
I don't know.
What if she said Quincy?
The crime-fighting coroner.
Matlock.
Columbo. Columbo.
Do you remember a show called Benson? Not Benson, but the governor.
Oh my God.
Funny.
I have no clue.
I love Benson.
I have no clue. No clue.
Well, who's your celebrity crush right now?
Oh, I've been into Magnum PI lately.
Tom Selleck.
Like the Tom Selleck Magnum PI.
Weren't far away, you know.
Before
Benson, Magnum PI, we're in the same world.
First concert.
It was the Whitney Houston and the Beach Boys.
Yes, Starship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whitney Houston and the Beach Boys.
Starship was there?
Starship.
Sarah.
We built this city on.
Yep. Yeah.
Stones won't blow in your eyes. I remember all of
it. Do you remember who we went with?
Sarah.
I remember our family.
The Maglione's.
Oh, that's who that was?
Yeah,
did I go town?
You had to, yeah.
Yeah, you had to.
You guys all went to the same concert.
Yeah, Tampa Bay Stadium.
Stadium. it was for 4th of July or something.
Yeah, it was 4th of July, and Whitney Houston fucking brought the thunder.
They were playing her national anthem the other day, and I was like, fuck, man.
I cried. I was on the treadmill, and I cried watching
it. Oh, my God.
It was so good.
Oh, man. We have it's a two-part. We ask all siblings the same question. The first part is, you know, if there was just, you know, there's three of you, so figure that part out. Do the math. If you could take something from your sibling that you admire, something that you wish that you had as a part of you, what would that be? And on the flip side of that, if you could alleviate something from your sibling, take something away that you think would make their life a little bit easier, what would that be?
Let's go youngest to oldest. So let's start with what you guys would like to take, you know, with Cottie.
I'd take away her anxiety easily.
Yeah, definitely the anxiety.
And I'd steal her quickness. Hmm. I'm not as quick as she is. Yeah. If I had that wit on stage, I would be destructive.
well, definitely anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we'd take that away from all of ourselves.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Put that out there.
Oh, is that the universal takeaway? Yeah.
None of us want it.
Hopefully you'd want to give that for me. She's a ball buster. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I could use a little more of that.
Yeah.
Like chintzy cat. No, not chintzy cat. Like the ball buster.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. What would we take from Annie? I would take your ability to be grounded in the moment.
100, yeah.
Just be able to fucking just be chill. I would love that. And then what would I give you?
Like your self-assurance. That's what I would take.
Yeah, I'd take that. Yeah. And then what would you
take from her?
Take away from her.
I mean,
I tell like you, I take away some of your shyness.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you just be a little bit more like me, I think you'd be a great person. All right. Now, what do you guys want from the big guy?
Your work ethic.
Yeah.
You're going to say my workouts.
Yeah, your workouts.
No.
Your body.
Your work ethic. And I would say your
like the comfort in your own skin.
Yeah.
I wish I could walk into any room and just.
You can walk into anything.
Any room.
Which is the nice thing about you. If you're someone with you, you don't have to worry about anything. You know, especially being an introvert.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, I can just coast along.
Mm-hmm.
What would I take out of you?
Anxiety. Drinking problem.
What would I take away from you? Probably how sensitive you are.
Oh, I would love to get rid of that. I would love to get rid of that.
So much. I mean, every time I call you, like, oh, I had a bad day with Georgia. I'm like,
sensitive, meaning like you just take things personally.
Oh, so across the board.
Yeah.
So personally. Like some guy can make a video where he doesn't like me or leave a comment and
eat him up for days.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But it's a good trait too that I'm glad I have it because, you know, adversely, if I go into a room like the back of the Comedy Store and I see someone that doesn't know anybody, I take a moment because I know what that would feel like. Mm-hmm. And I take a moment to go, hey, you know, I'll introduce you to everybody. And then I do that and then they feel a little more comfortable. I definitely am a little more aware of how people feel in certain situations because I'm so sensitive.
Yeah.
All right, guys, this has been awesome.
Hey, thank you guys.
Thank you guys so much. It was nice getting to know you.
This was a blast. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson and Oliver Hudson.
Producer is Allison Bresnik.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.
If you want to show us some love, rate the show and leave us a review. This show is powered by Simplecast.
You looking for some amazing TV to stream? Well, indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu that you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are streaming on Hulu. Then you can move on to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits. Streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking. The only thing better than getting delivery from Target is getting unlimited same-day delivery from Target. While you're on vacation. Okay. Sign up for the new Target Circle 360 so you can stock up on food, supplies, pool stuff, and everything in between without ever interrupting your summer plans. Also, summer hosting is so much easier when you have unlimited same-day delivery from Target. Take care of your guests. Target takes care of the rest. Sign up for the new Target Circle 360 today. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.